So we're reading today from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 16, and the verses 82 through 89. And I'm assuming it's 89 that's up there. Let's see. Okay, I'll just read the English to the preceding verses to 89. Everyone knows that lotus flowers grow in the water, but water never grows from a lotus. All such contradictions, however, are wonderfully possible in Krishna. The great river Ganges has grown from his lotus feet. The real glory of Mother Ganges is that she has grown from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Such a hypothesis is another ornament called Anumhan. I have simply discussed the five gross faults and five literary embellishments of this verse, but if we consider it in fine detail, we will find unlimited faults. You have achieved poetic imagination and ingenuity by the grace of your worshipable demigod, but poetry not well reviewed is certainly subject to criticism. Poetic skill used with due consideration is very pure, and with metaphors and analogies, it is dazzling. After hearing the explanation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the champion poet, struck with wonder, his cleverness stunned, could not say anything. He wanted to say something, but no reply could come from his mouth. He then began to consider this puzzle within his mind. So now we'll do the verse. Translation: this mere boy has blocked my intelligence. I can therefore understand that Mother Saraswati has become angry with me. Purport: in the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly said that all intelligence comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. The Paramatma gave the Pandit the intelligence to understand that because he was proud of his learning and wanted to defeat even the Supreme Lord, by the will of the Lord and through the agency of Mother Saraswati, he had been defeated. One should not therefore be too proud of one's position. Even if one is a greatly learned scholar, if he commits an offense to the lotus feet of the Lord, he will not be able to speak properly in spite of his learning. In every respect, we are controlled. Our only duty, therefore, is to surrender always to the lotus feet of the Lord and not be falsely proud. Mother Saraswati created this situation to favor the champion Pandit so that he might surrender unto Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om Agyanati Marandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvisesha Sunyavari Paschachade Shatarni Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So there's a couple of very interesting themes that are generated by this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think most of you have been coming to the other classes, so you know a little bit about the history of this incident, that this Keshava Kashmiri was a great pandit, and he'd been favored by Saraswati, the goddess of learning, so much so that he could defeat in argument any scholar. And he was a great poet as well. He could in the modern times, they have these people that spontaneously compose poetry, maybe not of the same character and quality, but they spontaneously sometimes compose poetry/doggerel very expertly. Anyway, he could compose very formal, beautiful compositions spontaneously. So he had empowered intelligence. So when I was reading a little bit for the background in Chaitanya Bhagavat, where the story is told more elaborately, and he had been traveling all over India, defeating people right, left, and center, and of course, and when he traveled with a huge entourage, including elephants and singers and Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya, including singers, dancers, elephants, huge processions accompanied him. So he was on his way to Navadvipa, which at that time was considered a great center of learning, especially in Nyaya or logic. And the pundits there were a little bit afraid because whoever he ever came up against was defeated. And of course, that was kind of a big deal in those days. Not only was it entertainment, but it also had a lot to do with prestige and honor and so forth and so on. So they felt that if he comes here to Navadvip, our reputation as a center of learning will be spoiled. So they were very worried about who in the world was going to have that job of trying to argue with him. So the disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at that time he was had quite a group of disciples who were very attached to him. And they were complaining to him that, what's going to happen? This person is so proud. He's coming and everyone is terrified of his reputation. So Lord Chaitanya began smiling and he gave them some assurances and he said, if you think carefully, you'll understand that no one in history who was very proud was ever allowed to maintain that pride for long. And he gave different examples like Narakasura, Banasura, Ravana, and others who were actually very learned. You know, there's the old expression that pride precedes the fall. So this is basically what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told his students. Don't worry. Krishna will not allow him to maintain his pride. So that's one theme that's developed a little bit in this verse. The pandit at this point is thinking, it must be because Saraswati is irritated with me for some reason. Otherwise, how could this mere boy defeat me? So, it says the Paramatma gave the pandit the intelligence to understand. Well, he was given the intelligence to understand there had to be some reason that he couldn't defeat the boy. So we understand that intelligence comes from the Supersoul. Ultimately, that's the source of intelligence. There's an interesting story I wanted to begin with. Prabhupada was lecturing, and it's been a long time since I heard the tape, so I can't remember where he was lecturing, but I think it was in India. It might have been in Mumbai. And he was giving, at the end of the lecture, they asked for questions, and somebody from the audience challenged that, well, what I've heard so far is simply sentiment. Said, I want to know by logic. Speak to me on the basis of logic. So then, Prabhupada gave a very lengthy presentation on logic, based on logic. So I'm going to finish the story at the end of the class. This is the introduction. You have to remind me, in case I forget, I'm old, so I might forget. But anyway, so Prabhupada spoke to him on logic, and this is the type of logic that he gave. This is, I'm going to read something to you now from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is in the second canto, second chapter, the 35th verse, which is exactly on this theme of where intelligence comes from. And the verse goes like this. I'm just going to stick to the English since I'm a little better at that. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being, along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So, the speaker is mentioning that Krishna and the individual soul are within the heart of every living entity. There's the individual jiva, and then there's the Lord. And he said this fact can be perceived in our acts of seeing and taking help from intelligence. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada basically gives a logical explanation of why we should, first of all, understand that we are not matter, we're spirit, and also that we're taking help from a higher intelligence. So, I've been studying this verse now for about, because I first came across it in 1972, and I've been trying to understand it ever since. But most of it's understandable, but there are parts where suddenly it's kind of like sound. You know, there's a certain level of sound that we're able to perceive. But if it goes above a certain frequency, we can no longer hear it, or we can no longer grasp it. So it's kind of like this sometimes with philosophy. Up to a certain point, we understand, and then it becomes more ephemeral or difficult. But anyway, so just try to stick with this as we go through it and see if you can. I'm sure some of you will be able to follow it better than I did, but it's very interesting, Prabhupada using logic to establish the soul and the supersoul. And even that which is beyond the supersoul in the form of the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So he says, this is the way he begins. This is the purport. The general argument of the common man is that since the Lord is not visible to our eyes, how can one either surrender unto him or render transcendental loving service unto him? To such a common man, here is a practical suggestion given by Srila Shukadeva Goswami as to how one can perceive the Supreme Lord by reason and perception. Actually, the Lord is not perceivable by our present materialized senses. But when one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude, there is a revelation by the Lord's mercy. So right off, Prabhupada's establishing that it cannot be understood except by revelation, and that revelation comes by practice of devotional service. Otherwise, you can't understand. So that's the, you could say that's the, that's the premise, at least. What in geometry, I forget, they used to have something called that which is the given. You start with this. This is the given. The what? The postulate. Can you speak louder? I can't. Oh, it's a postulate. Okay, it's a postulate. We'll call it a postulate. So, now it says, and such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. He can perceive that intelligence is the form direction of the Paramatma plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. The presence of Paramatma in everyone's company is not very difficult to realize, even for the common man. Well, it says here, it's easy to understand. So, the procedure is as follows. So here's the procedure. One can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. He may not feel it very abruptly, but by using a little intelligence, he can feel that he is not the body. He can feel that the hand, the leg, the head, the hair, and the limbs are all his bodily parts and parcels. But as such, the hand, the leg, the head, etc. cannot be identified with his self. Actually, Prabhupada used to use this sometimes with children. He would have them point to different parts of their bodies and say, you know, say, what is this? And then they would say, and then he would say, no, but where are you? And they wouldn't know where to point. So this is basically logic, that Anyway, Prabhupada develops it. He says, therefore, just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate his self from other things that he sees. So, the natural conclusion is that the living being, either man or beast, is the seer. And he sees besides himself all of the things. So there is a difference between the seer and the seen. So this is the first point in logic, that there's a difference between that which sees and that which is seen. So the thing that sees, that's us, that's the soul. And the rest of it is all equipment. That which is seen. And at that what we see in the world also. These are all manifestations of the material energy. So there's a difference between the seer and that which you see. That's the first point. Then he goes on. Now, by a little use of intelligence, we can also readily agree that the living being who sees the things beyond himself by ordinary vision has no power to see or to move independently. So that means that we're dependent upon the mechanisms and arrangement of material nature, this body, for our perception. We have no perception without something that's been supplied to us. So that's his point, that we don't have any power to see or to move even. Just as the jiva is situated in the heart, he desires. But if the Lord doesn't sanction that desire, he can't do anything. Just like if you're paralyzed, you may desire all you like to move, but you can't. So we are dependent. We're in a dependent position. And that is also logical. It makes perfect sense. As long as you're still separating yourself from matter, then you can understand we have no independent ability to move, to act, or to do anything. So he goes on, all our ordinary actions and perceptions depend on various forms of energy supplied to us by nature in various combinations. Our senses of perception and of action, that is to say our five perceptive senses of 1, hearing, 2, touch, 3, sight, 4, taste, and 5, smell, as well as our five senses of action, namely hands, legs, speech, evacuation organs, reproductive organs, and also our three subtle senses, namely mind, intelligence, ego, 13 senses in all. They're supplied to us by various arrangements of gross or subtle forms of natural energy. So we're completely dependent on that which has been supplied to us. We have no independence, really. We're always in a dependent position. Of course, we know as servants that we're dependent in every way for everything. So Prabhupada develops it further. He says, as this conclusively proves that the ordinary living being has no independent power of perception or of motion, so we cannot perceive and we cannot move independently. And as we undoubtedly feel our existence being conditioned by nature's energy, we conclude that he who sees is spirit, and that the senses as well as the objects of perception are material. The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with a limited state of materially conditioned existence. Now, this is a very profound sentence. I don't think it just strikes me as profound. It's a profound statement. He says that our spiritual quality as the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with a limited state of materially conditioned existence. That means in this world, we are not satisfied with the situation that we're in, being embodied, being in a place where birth, death, old age, and disease predominate. We're not satisfied with that. No one is satisfied. Everybody's always hankering, desiring something. So it says that that's an indication, that dissatisfaction with, as he says, the limited state of materially conditioned existence because of its limitations. We're eternal. So how could you be satisfied in a temporary situation? You see everyone around you is dying. No one wants that. In Dallas, when Prabhupada came there to, he asked us right off the bat, he gathered all the teachers together and he said, so what is the goal of your teaching? So people began to give very, almost flowery, answers. And Prabhupada wasn't really very happy with any of them. And then finally he said, the point of your teaching is to stop death. He said that this should be the last death. So he, all this sort of pie in the, I don't know, maybe not pie in the sky, but all of these fancy answers that people were coming up with, he said, no, the whole point is to stop death. That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. We're here to stop death. Because he said, these things, these miseries, janma mrityu jara vyadi, these are miseries. Birth, death, old age, disease, these are miseries. Nobody wants it. And he kept making that point. Actually, he repeatedly made this. Nobody wants this. So this is Krishna consciousness. This is the purpose of Krishna consciousness, to stop this. He called it a nuisance business. He's to stop this nuisance business called death. Somehow that struck me as humorous. Maybe it's black humor, I don't know, but to call death a nuisance. Is only a self-realized soul can see it that way. We're thinking it's something pretty serious, dying. And he's just calling that a little bit of a nuisance, isn't it? Having to die. And not only once, but repeatedly. I mean, it's a nuisance. From a transcendental perspective, it is a nuisance. An irritation. So, anyway, that was a little purport on that one sutra-like statement of Prabhupada's. Now let me go on. So I'll just read it again. The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of materially conditioned existence. So that's what our dissatisfaction is all about. That is the difference between spirit and matter. There are some less intelligent arguments that matter develops the power of seeing and moving as a certain organic development. So this is obviously the very familiar theory that life has developed from matter. So he says, he calls that a less intelligent argument. He says, but such an argument cannot be accepted because there is no experimental evidence that matter has anywhere produced a living entity. Trust no future, however pleasant. He used to say that a lot too. Somebody, when the scientists were making big claims, he would say, trust no future, no matter how pleasant. Idle talks regarding future development of matter into spirit are actually foolish, because no matter has ever developed the power of seeing or moving in any part of the world. Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities. And this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. So basically he's saying if you're intelligent, you'll be able to understand this. Now we come to the point that things which are seen by a little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user of or director of the intelligence. So there's intelligence, but he's saying intelligence has to be directed. So there's a higher intelligence. He's basically saying that causes us to behave. And it's just like this Keshava Kashmiri. He was being given intelligence by Paramatma. His own intelligence had been stunted, you remember, it had been blocked. He didn't even know what to say. And so then Paramatma gave him the intelligence, maybe you've done something you shouldn't have. In essence, was telling him, you're off here, buddy. You've done something you shouldn't have. Because he was considering the Supreme Lord of the universe to be a mere child, can be dismissed. But of course he couldn't dismiss him now because he'd just been made a fool of. And even the students of Lord Chaitanya, they started to laugh when the Keshava Kashmir couldn't speak, and Lord Chaitanya stopped them. And also there's another interesting feature. Lord Chaitanya did not want to defeat the pundit publicly. So it was at night, it was nighttime, there was a full moon out, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his students were sitting by the Ganges when the pandit showed up, because he didn't want to defeat him in a public place to humiliate him. So this is another interesting lesson, that even if you have superior knowledge or intelligence, you shouldn't lord over other people unnecessarily. You shouldn't try to make them feel shattered and humiliated. So much so that even after Lord Chaitanya, Keshava Kashmiri spoke for 3 hours. 3 hours. He composed this poem. Lord Chaitanya very humbly approached him and said, could you just, give us some poetry about the Ganges? I'm sure it'll be very enlightening for everyone. And so he just spontaneously composed 100 verses. 100 verses right on the spot. Then Lord Chaitanya just took one verse and showed 5 faults and 5 ornaments. And he was so stunned, but Lord Chaitanya began to encourage him. He said, still, there's no poet as great as you. He said, I know that you cannot speak right now, so let's meet tomorrow and you can, we can discuss further. You can give us your answer at that time. So he was kind to him. He was kind to him. And he didn't let his students laugh. He stopped them when they started laughing. He stopped them. So just see the compassionate nature of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he didn't want to utterly humiliate him, even though he was a bit humiliated, but his level of pride was, as we say, off the charts. And he was trying to shatter his pride. And ultimately, as we know, Saraswati revealed to the pundit who this person was that he'd been speaking to, and he came the next day and surrendered in a very humble way. He glorified Lord Chaitanya with many beautiful prayers, and Lord Chaitanya admitted everything that he'd said, because Saraswati had revealed that this is God, this is the Supreme Personality, this is the Supreme Lord. This so-called boy that you're dealing with is the Supreme Lord, and I can't stand in front of him. When he speaks, everyone is bewildered. So he said, but you should not disclose this to anyone. Lord Chaitanya instructed Keshava Kashmir, do not disclose our conversation to anyone else. So people couldn't understand who this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, even though he was able to immediately, without even any effort practically, defeat this great scholar. And the credit of Keshava Kashmiri is that despite being a great scholar, usually somebody fancies themselves a great scholar, they often start to think that they're superior. We had several incidences of this in our own movement, different Sanskrit scholars who decided that due to their great learning they knew more than Prabhupada. And they were trying to even correct him in his understanding. And we know that pride often precedes a fall, and learning is sometimes a great obstacle to devotion. It doesn't have to be. In his case, he was learned, but he also was humble, and he surrendered himself completely when he was defeated. So this is a mark of good character. It's not a mark of good character if someone gives you logical arguments and you refuse to accept it. Well, not just logical, but gives you arguments based on Vedic knowledge and you don't accept it, well, that's your fault. So we should try to be humble. That's obviously one of the themes. Anyway, let's go back to this. Prabhupada doesn't have too much respect for this idea that the living being evolves from matter. He says, therefore it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities. And this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. Now we come to the point that the things which are seen by a little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as a user of or director of the intelligence. So now we're coming to the Paramatma level. Intelligence gives one direction, like some higher authority. And the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged person. So, if you act without proper intelligence, for us, intelligence means if we act on the basis of Shastra, on the basis of the directions of the spiritual master, that's intelligent. If we act whimsically or on the basis of our own sense gratification, that's deranged behavior. And it's also irresponsible behavior. So, actually, back to this thing in Dallas, Prabhupada also said during that talk, he said that about responsibility and irresponsibility. He said, if one is not endeavoring to become self-realized, to get out of the cycle of birth and death, if one's not endeavoring seriously to get out of the cycle of birth and death, he's irresponsible. There's a lot of talk in contemporary circles, in business, in administration, in teaching, so many different fields of activity. There's a lot of talk about being responsible. And sometimes people think being responsible is simply about showing up on time, which is also a kind of responsibility. But he said the real responsibility is you're supposed to be endeavoring for getting out of this cycle of birth and death. And if one is not doing that, then he's irresponsible. Irresponsible. So, you become deranged if you don't follow proper intelligence. Intelligence is coming from the Supersoul, intelligence is coming from the Shastra, intelligence is coming from the Sadhus, from the Guru. This is the source of intelligence for us. So Prabhupada goes on, such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence, and this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority, who is present and residing within every individual living being, is the super-self. So, at this point, Prabhupada continues, at this point in our investigation, we may consider the following question. So this is the question he wants us to consider. Is everybody with it so far? I know that I can sometimes bore people with my enthusiastic ideas of what's interesting. So I apologize in advance, anyone who's, you know, wishes I would shut up, because I'm not going to right away. Anyway, sorry if anybody's upset. At this point in our investigation, we have to consider the following question. On the one hand, we realize that all our perceptions and activities are conditioned by arrangements of material nature. Yet we also ordinarily feel and say, I am perceiving, I am doing. Therefore, we can say that our material senses of perception and action are moving because we are identifying the self with the material body, and that the superior principle of super-self is guiding and supplying us according to our desire. So we're being guided by the super-soul, even if we don't realize it. We're being guided by the super-soul in the fulfillment of our own desires. So if we desire in a irresponsible way, then we suffer. If we desire in a responsible way, we make progress. We might still suffer a bit, but they will also make progress in Krishna consciousness. So by taking advantage of the guidance of super self in the form of intelligence, we can either continue to study and to put into practice our conclusion that I am not this body, or we can choose to remain in the false material identification, fancying ourselves to be the possessors and doers. So that's illusory thinking, that we are the possessor or that we're the doers. No, we're the desirers. We're not really the doers in that sense. Our freedom consists in orienting our desire either toward the ignorant material misconception or the true spiritual conception. We can easily attain to the true spiritual conception by recognizing the super self Paramatma to be our friend and guide, and by dovetailing our intelligence with the superior intelligence of Paramatma. The super self and the individual self cannot be on an equal level because the super self gives direction or supplies intelligence. So we're always in inferior or lesser position, because we're the ones being guided by a higher authority, by a higher force, a higher intelligence. Hopefully. Of course, we always are, really, but sometimes people object to the idea of being under anybody's authority or guidance, or that anyone's superior to them. Some people object to this idea. So it says, back to the words here, these individual self cannot be on an equal level because the super self gives direction or supplies intelligence, and the individual self follows the direction, and thus actions are performed properly. The individual is completely dependent on the direction of the super self because in every step, the individual self follows the direction of the super self in the matter of seeing, hearing, thinking, feeling, willing, etc. So far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and super spirit. So it's interesting the way Paramatma, he's calling it the super self, super spirit, different terms for the same thing, the higher intelligence that we're dependent on. Now, if we go to the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic intelligence, so again, as I was saying, there's Paramatma, that's the form of intelligence. There is also the Vedic literature, that's also intelligence, pure intelligence, especially Bhagavad Gita, Gita Upanishad, the cream of the Upanishads. So if we're following the directions of Bhagavad Gita under the guidance of a spiritual master, we're acting intelligently. We're acting according to real intelligence. Our whims are not usually not intelligent. You notice I said usually. Occasionally a whim is okay. A little whimsy. It's all right, but we shouldn't depend on it. Now, if we go to the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, namely matter, individual spirit, and the super spirit, are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even the Paramatma is in a dependent position because it's just one of the many manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The super self is a partial representation or plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So realization of the super self by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization. So recognizing that we are under the higher authority of Paramatma and the Vedic literature and all the things we've mentioned, that's the beginning of self-realization. And by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally, and what do you think is the principal element? What's the principal element in becoming a self-realized soul? Come on, you've heard this in dozens of classes. Of course, I'm looking at it, so I have an edge. What's the element? Okay, we're studying the Vedic literature, we're practicing devotional service, we're following the spiritual master. Now, what is the additional element that's required for self-realization? That's close. I mean, it's not wrong. Very good. Yeah, exactly. Mercy. So it says, here's what it says. He says, we're able to realize Krishna by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally, he says, by the grace of the Lord. So again, back to this scholarship theme. Keshava Kashmiri was very proud of his scholarship, of his intelligence, thinking it was his intelligence, his scholarship. I'm the doer, I'm the great pundit. But he was minus something important, the principal thing about the grace of the Lord, which he did get in the end. So it's a happy ending. The story ends happily. Prabhupada, just another half a paragraph here. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary conception of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the further explanation of the science of Godhead. So it's a science. The science of self-realization. Prabhupada even titled, as you know, one of the books was titled Science of Self-Realization. So if we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence, sitting within the same bodily tree like a bird, sitting with another bird, as explained in the Upanishads, certainly the purport of the revealed information in the Vedas becomes clear to our vision. And there is no difficulty in realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. The intelligent man, after many births of such use of intelligence, so I'll read that again, the intelligent man or woman, therefore, after many births of such use of intelligence, surrenders himself to the lotus feet of Vasudev as confirmed by the Bhagavad Gita. What's the verse? Huh? Yes. Chant. Go ahead. Ante gyanavang mang prapadyante Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma surdurlabha. After many, many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So now I don't want to I had more, but I'm going to skip it. Because I wanted to finish the story. See, I didn't forget. Amazing. Paramatma helped. Maybe helped me. So this man was insisting that Prabhupada prove to him that Krishna, you know, about Krishna by logic. So Prabhupada gave him a logical argument. I can't remember the whole argument, but it's something like what we just went through. He gave logic. Fantastic. I mean, and at the end of his presentation of logic, he stopped and he just looked at the man. And the man then said, well, I don't think you can prove everything by logic. So Prabhupada, yes, that's true, he said, but since you asked for logic, I have given you. So then the man says, well, then what is your point exactly? And Prabhupada said, Krishna is God, take it. That was the conclusion. So if you approach logically, if you approach sincerely, from the heart, or however you approach Krishna, that's fine, but we're trying to invoke the mercy of Krishna by sincerely practicing devotional service. And then we're always dependent. I remember there was a great Bhakti-guided issue that came out in, I think, 1976. And on the picture it said, declaring our dependence on God. Because it was 200-year celebration of the American independence, 1776 to 1976. You know, that was the independence. We declared our independence from England. And so they said, we're declaring our dependence on God, on Krishna. So that's actually, I just felt that that story, it sort of illustrates how wonderful this whole process is, this information that we've been given. It really is the science of self-realization. Again, one has to follow. Unless one, as we said right at the beginning, unless one follows the path of bhakti, of sadhana bhakti, if one doesn't practice, then this revelation will not come. We have to follow. It's like in even in any ordinary scientific activity, if a particular methodology is prescribed to see or understand something, you have to follow it. Otherwise, how can you understand? Like if it's prescribed that you have to look through a microscope or telescope to see something, then you have to do that. Otherwise, how will you see it? So this process is a science in that sense. It's experiential in the sense that we have to follow a process for revelation to come. Now, the problem is you can't speed up revelation. At least we see it as a problem. We think, I don't think I'm getting anywhere. Now, of course, there's many reasons why we might feel like that. It has to do with our practice. Sometimes there are deficiencies or defects in our practice. But again, in the end, we're simply dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So our sincerity is shown that we continue sincerely to practice Krishna consciousness, hoping always, hope against hope, as Rupa Goswami says, for the mercy of God to descend on us. Ultimately, that's what we really depend on. But to invoke that mercy, we have to show our sincerity. We have to exhibit. We can't just think, oh, I won't do anything. I'll just hope for mercy. Well, it's a nice sentiment, but not very practical. You know, I won't do anything and I'll expect everything. Well, there has to be endeavor. It has to be sincere endeavor. So we've been given a process. We have to follow it. That's all. So, questions. We have a couple of minutes here.